with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Here, basking in the glory, my aura of Mark Tobin is here in the studio. I'm so giddy every time I see him. He's just a wonderful human.
Oh, it's just because I brought you a big apple fritter.
Exactly. I wouldn't say that, but you did bring me an apple fritter, and it was way too big, and I ate it anyway.
That was a meal. I can't believe you polished that off.
Oh, man, I was hungry. You know, I think I had a bowl of Raisin Bran for supper last night, and that was about it.
Oh, so. You need more than that.
Yeah. So what the hey? Hey, we got kind of an amped up show here today.
Oh,
don't
my
we?
Gosh. So excited, yeah.
If all three of our listeners are deer hunters, please wake somebody up and tell them Dr. James Kroll, Dr. Deer, is going to be our radio guest at the bottom of the hour at 6:30.
Well, you talk about it, encyclopedia.
Yeah.
This guy knows it all.
Unbelievable. And it's going to be kind of interesting, you know, to talk to him about growing. Basically, what we all need to do is grow big deer. You know, let them walk and get nutrition, and we'll talk all about that, I'm just sure. I don't want to start off as negative, but it's just about 2 hours after turkey season was over on Sunday in Missouri, my phone started ringing, and people started texting me, and very discouraged about the last turkey season.
My wife just texted me that we're not on.
We're not on the air?
Are we on the air, Block A?
He's in the closet. I think he's banging his head against the wall in the closet. Huh. We might have technical difficulties, huh? How come it's always us? We all right? We're on the air again now? Now you're going, yeah. Well, anyway, if you happen we missed the first part of the show, our guest is amped up as Dr. Kroll. Dr. Deer, as we call him, Dr. James Kroll. I'm kind of amped up about putting him on
air. Oh, I mean to tell you, he's a walking encyclopedia. Nobody knows more
about
deer
special.
And deer man. Oh, my gosh, yeah. This is a big deal. He's bigger than life.
Yeah, this is a major coup for us and ICL because we've got so many deer hunters that listen. And if you've got a deer hunter in your family, go ahead and wake them up. We'll be on at 6:30. Dr. Kroll will be, so everything will be fine in the deal. So I hope it all works out. Now, not to start off negative again, as I was saying, 2 hours after turkey season, I started getting text after text after text after text, and looked at the old Facebook and things like that. But the turkey season, to say, was dismal. I don't know if that's an understatement. I was in birds. Me and my boy happened to get into some birds. I actually even passed one up, and I got so much turkey meat in the freezer, and I thought, well, what the hay? It's just 30. Let me look, see. Now, this was, I didn't update this, and I probably should have before we started the show, but as of 2 days that were left, this was the last count 2 days before season, we're down to 30,141 birds that were taken. So that is not good. In 2021, we end up final with a total of 34,583 turkeys. In 2020, we ended up with 41,454. But go back to 2004, 60,744 birds.
Oh, my gosh. That's horrible.
And it's just absolutely horrendous. And everybody wants point fingers. Everybody's called me, oh, my. And the Missouri Department of Conservation is a big, everybody's pointing at them. Well, they're talking, you know, I have friends tell me, well, we need to go to 1 week and one bird or 5 days and one bird and on and on and on. And the harvest part of the wild turkey has very little effect.
Right.
It's just not the birds out there. You know, you go back to the equation back years ago when they, you know, you get two, and you're duck hunting, you have two drakes and two hens with a bag limit. Well, we stayed off the hens and always just shot nothing but drakes. But now after reading study, that has nothing to do with the equation. It's kind of like taking a bucket of water out of the ocean. You know, it didn't have much to do with it. But this turkey thing is really, really good. In 99, we had 50,000 birds. 2000, we had 56,000 birds harvested. 2004, we had 60,000 birds harvested. So the Dr. Green, I believe his name is, he's a alleged one of the smarter turkey people in the state of Missouri. He says it's predation. A lack of habitat, of course. You know, can't push out every fence row there is. But, and I kind of argue about pushing out fence rows because when they do nest in fence rows, that's where the predators go and they smell them and consume them. An interesting fact, I jumped a hen as I was walking out the last day and she had 12 eggs underneath of her. You know how many of those? She's going to hatch about all 12 of them. You know how many will survive? 2.3.
Really? Wow.
And that'll still produce a good turkey crop. And so some of them will be lucky enough to raise 8 of the 12. Some of them will lose all of them. But it's predation. And I understand this. You know, we had Sarah Parker Polly on.
Mm-hmm. From the Missouri Department of Conservation.
And I asked her directly, why don't we put a bounty on the deal? Well, people would come in from state line. They'd pick up road kills. Yeah, 20% of them would.
Yeah.
But 80% of them would, you know, be taking the fur-bearing part out of the equation. The actual kill, just got a text from Kelly Kurtz, 36,251 birds.
Wow.
For the year. So way, way down. Mm-hmm. Talked to a turkey hunter who called me, a friend of mine, and he said, I have a friend, Mark. I just thought I'd throw that in. Yeah.
Oh, now.
Yeah. Well, I call him a friend. He might not on the other side, but that's okay. But he went 10 days out here in a gobble.
Mm.
Now, that's kind of like you fishing on Lake the Ozark for 10 days, never get a bite.
Yeah, I know, right.
And I'm sure you've been
Well, unfortunately.
But it is just, it's time to stop all this nonsense. You know, we are, Missouri is the richest conservation department in the world. And if you need another $5 on my turkey tag, so be it. But we got to get predation management under control.
Something has to be done. It's gone past the point of, this is getting ridiculous now. We know there's a problem.
Yeah.
You got to start addressing it.
Yeah, and it's not just been a problem for the last 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, 9 years, 10 years. It's eroded.
Yeah.
And duh. So they do two studies. I think one's in Putnam County and somewhere, as she told us there on the other day. Yeah.
It's a five-year study. We don't need 5 years.
Don't need 5 years. Go talk to a mushroom hunter who walks up on the eggs that have been predated.
Yeah.
Go talk to someone who's been out turkey hunting every day, and I walk up on the nest, and it's already predated.
Yeah.
You know, and as opening day of my turkey season, I called in 6 raccoons.
Wow.
And you know, what's happening is, and my gut feeling is, one, I was kind of in a travel corridor where they didn't have much option, but the other one is I think they've learned – they hear that hen yelping, there might be a nest around somewhere.
Yeah, right.
Learn behavior.
Wow.
So I don't know that, but I...
But, I mean, look, you called in 6 raccoons.
Yeah.
I mean...
In daylight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that should be a night critter.
Right.
And what was weird about it, this one came right up to me and stood up on his back legs and looked all around through his nose up in the air. Well, I know what that...
Yeah,
that,
you know what it was doing.
It's doing something on the deal.
It's done that before.
Yeah, and I called in coyotes. My buddies all called in bobcats this year.
Dang, you know, that's not good.
They don't have a chance.
No.
So, you know, come on. Let's raise the price turkey tag if we have to. I don't think we should have to, but I think they got plenty of money. They're the richest there is. And let's tell it like it is.
Yeah.
You know, and let's forget, quit lollygagging around waiting for 5 years for this to get better. Now, I am sure, Mark, you know I'm very passionate about this, and a lot of my friends are too, and I'm glad that they are. You know, I mean, this is a good problem in a way because it shows the thought pattern of outdoor enthusiasts. They want to restore, and, you know, you got to change. Something's got to be changed, and predation is step A. So you're going to lose 20% of your money. You know, I can't legislate morality.
Yeah.
You know, for
that,
years.
That doesn't mean it's a bad idea.
No, and we'll still be 80% effective.
Yeah, right.
kind of like our government. Is it government 80% effective?
Oh, I wouldn't even give it that much.
Oh, really?
It's more like the 20%.
20%. Yep. But now here's the thing that went on. Governor Kristi Noem, which we are still going to get her on as a guest one of these days, she put on a bounty on predators in the state up there. And they only put $700,000 in. I think in 30 days the money was gone. They put $7 a tail or something on a predation. And I think the next time they came back with maybe, and I'm going off gray matter, I'm old and I forget things, $1.2 million, and it went way real quick too. But it worked. Duh. It worked. And I always wonder if sometimes the MDC, with its clout and its power, and I love them. I mean, I'm not mad at them. I'm not mad at them. Anybody got to understand that. I come in peace. It's the passion part of it. That
right.
I want, you know, if you were Lake the Ozarks and all the crappie died, you would be upset.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not happy with the turkey deal. I don't hunt them like you do, but, you know, I haven't seen hardly any turkey, and I love it.
Yeah.
And they're not there, and this has got to change. Mm-hmm. And again, this is nothing that's happened overnight, and I don't understand why it's not being addressed.
I think it is, but the wheels of justice turn so slow, you know. I'm go get them guy, you know, and you are too. You know, you got to go out here and make things happen. And it just cannot stand. And it's that way in Kansas. It's that way in Texas. It's that way in Nebraska. The turkey population is way, 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 way down. Back years ago, the liberals started giving women hell for wearing fur. And
right.
So they quit buying it. And they run a lot of thinking, you know, I mean, a lot of things on the deal. And now here's what they don't think through, Mark. And I'm sorry, I'm running off the end of the earth here. We're about out of time. But, you know, we, the civilization, have created this problem by old foundation, old barns for the coons to nest and get underneath of and have their young on the dang thing. So we've kind of created this problem. I know that's what's happened up in North Dakota on their study on the mallard predation. You know, so if we've created a problem, let's cure it.
Yeah.
Pretty darn simple, isn't it?
That doesn't seem like rocket science.
Yeah.
And I think it's Kristi Noem's program, it seems like it's been wildly successful. It's really done a great job saving the pheasant population. So
And
I mean, use that as a, you know, as a ruler. You know, this is a good example of what can be done and what needs to be done.
Let's don't stand around and wring our hands. Let's do something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just do something. I, you know, try to do something. Cutting the season and a bag lemon is going to have nothing on the equation.
That's not what caused the problem.
That isn't the problem. The problem is a lack of birds on a darn thing. So, hey, if you got a deer hunter in your family and you just tuned in, we're going to have Dr. James Kroll on at 6:30. Dr. Deer, as they say, ought to make a good radio show. And we are brought to you by King City Lumber, kingcitylumber.com. Marty and Monty Tunks, the finest humans to walk the face of the earth. I go up there to King City, and they walk down the street in their flowing robes. And they got that reservoir outside, and they can walk across that. I mean, they're just that kind of people.
It was actually just a puddle.
Well, it's
but they walked on it.
Yeah, but it's pretty big out there. Have you ever been up there, a reservoir there, King City? It's a good fishery, too. But don't tell nobody. Don't want nobody going up there. But these guys are the best. King City Lumber is the best. Go to their website, kingcitylumber.com, and they will help. If you don't see the building that you like, they'll help you design one. They're master carpenters. There's nobody on the face that I know that wreck these kind of buildings that does this good. And they will stand behind you 110%. They will not leave your job site until you're 110% satisfied. How's that sound? And now, I had a buddy that the foundation sagged. There was a soft spot there, and they came back and fixed it. Now, what kind of people would do that free of charge? So if you got a problem, they got a problem. But kingcitylumber.com. Gonna take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Before we get back to the show, how's our good friend Joe Falco doing?
Fantastically. They've still got a couple of boats out there. If you're in the market, you better get out there and take care of it, though. I mean, it just doesn't look good for availability going into the summer, but They've got some now, so, and they've got some pontoons, and just it's kind of like Reed Chevrolet. These are just the best bunch of people, though. Yep. If you're going to be the market, no, they're just good people to work with. If you have a problem with your boat, which you will.
I was going to throw that in.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like a car eventually. Yeah, I mean, you're going to have a problem with it, and they're just the best. There's just not a problem that they can't fix. Dave Hemme, he's the head mechanic out there, and I just love him to death. He's just nothing he can't figure out. Yeah. But a good bunch of folks out there. It's Sportsman's Outfit and Marine. They're on the south side of Belton. Whether you need want to look at a new boat or possibly a used boat or go get it fixed, you're going to have to sooner or later. Yeah. You might as well go someplace where you can trust them. It's Sportsman's Outfit and Marine out there in Belton.
Don't get no better than Joe Falco.
That's right.
That's for darn sure. Got a little frog in my throat. I got allergies are kind of kicking.
Good God, the pollen's horrible.
Oh, it's terrible.
Tree pollen some grass pollen is showing up out there.
I'm paying for it. I know you've been worried about this. I'm going to break this news to you, Mark, here on the air. The Duck Lake has got planted.
Oh, good.
And
I was nervous about that.
Yeah, I knew you was very distraught, and we did manage to get it all planted, I think. I mean, the seed went somewhere. It hadn't come up yet, so it's down.
You're able to work
somewhere.
It. I mean,
hit right before the rain, and the whole works and deal. You know, I went home after being on that tractor for several hours, 12 hours. I turned on the PBR, Professional Bull Riders.
Why?
And I'm sitting there in my easy chair, and I thought, that guy's got to stay on that bull for 8 seconds. I just sat on a 30-10 for 12, bucking back and forth and over in front and three over the steering
about
wheel.
About the same?
There's no difference, except I have to be 12 hours, and he only has to be 8 seconds.
Just as much pain, but.
Man, I'm going to tell you what. Until you disc gumbo across the rows, you disc it at an angle, and oh my goodness, you just up and down and over the steering wheel and back and rocking back and forth. Only got stuck once.
Oh, how'd you get out?
I just rocked it and kept playing with it. Finally got it out myself. But gee whiz, last year I got stuck 11 times.
Oh my good gosh.
Trying to disc up nothing, no duckling. We farm the bottom of the bottom. It's the lowest place in America. That good dirt, that old gumbo stuff on the deal. Hey, I've been around a while, and I read a lot about the fishing reports. I've never heard of such fishing as there is. Last year I thought was great. This year's looking at me a little bit better.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. It was so cool for so long, and the fish were really slow to respond. But not that you couldn't catch them, but, boy, we got some warm weather. That water's warmed up a little bit, and it's on fire. A lot of fish are getting caught right now, and it's kind of weird. I was talking to Richard Bowling over our guide on Truman, and there's some people catching fish up on the bank. He's catching fish out further, and he's catching fish that have spawned. He has caught fish the same day that are oozing eggs, and he's caught some that are not even close to spawning yet. So it's going on hot and heavy.
Out.
But I know, right?
Wow.
But, definitely. And Truman, it was 11 feet high, might be closer to 10 foot high today, but they're drawing that lake down now. And, that's just this time of year when they're doing that, that's the place to be. Uh-huh. Whether it's down below the dam, they're catching hybrids, or get up there on the weir, up there above the dam. Although that's a very social type of fishing. If you don't like a crowd, then don't go up to the weir.
I talked to my buddy. He was going by the weir as I called him on the phone, and he said it was 11 o'clock, and said there's 15 boats out in front of the weir. I guess about sunset, of course, that's when the fish seem to get better on that weir. He said you got to get a parking permit practically. There's so many people out there in the deal.
I know. It's just horrible. Well, but that tells you a lot. I mean, that only happens when the fish are going, and they're going right now, the hybrids and white bass up there on the weir.
I got a lot of pictures, and I don't think I can remember quality as good as it is.
Oh, I know. There's some big crappie being caught. I've heard there's a lot of bass being caught right now, too, especially down on Truman. They say if you can't catch bass right now, you just shouldn't be fishing for them. But it's that easy. But yeah, it's and the walleye, they spawn. They're out on their summer pattern now. They're out on those main lake flats, and they've got the feed bag on. This is my favorite time
this
to
is
fish
it.
For walleye.
This is May.
Yeah. Yep.
Get out there and get after it.
Yeah.
And today it's so nice outside. I get out of my truck. You know, I'm used to having a jacket on, run to the inside here to get warm. It's a wonderful morning.
This is perfect.
This is perfect.
It's so, you know, unfortunately we had that 4 days in a row of 90 degree plus weather, and that's too much like summer, too early for me.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah.
But this is invigorating, refreshing, smells good. I just love it. This coming up starting, it is tomorrow, May 15th through September 15th, the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks has the Great Kansas Fishing Derby. And Phil Taunton, the radio host from What's an Outdoor, sent me this information. I don't know a whole lot about it, but again, it'll run from May 15th to September 15th. I think Phil said that tomorrow the lakes that are going to be participating in this will be announced. But there's going to be at least 500 specially tagged fish located in something like 37 different bodies of water, and lots of chances to win different kinds of prizes.
Oh, cool.
So check that out. Go to the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks website, and you can see there. Just type in, do a Google search for the Great Kansas Fishing Derby, and you get more information on it. But that should be fun.
Oh, it could be a hoot.
And with the fishing right now.
Well, they're giving away a color TV. I'd like to have one.
Yeah, I don't know.
We got that black and white we've had since 1950.
It's time for an upgrade.
Philco.
Yeah, time for an upgrade. You've got your money's worth out of that.
Well, it's an 18-inch screen. It's a dig. You know, I got to get close, but it's an off-good quality picture, black and white. What is going on in Kansas? Have you talked to any of the guide services over there?
Terry Levendusky. I have a hard time pronouncing his name. Absolute
and
fishing.
What's his handle? What's his name?
Terry Levendusky.
Levendusky. Yeah.
But his business is Absolute Fishing Guides. I'm trying to get him. I think we're going to have him on the show next week.
Cool.
But he's a multi-lake, multi-species guide.
Oh,
and super nice guy. I met him at that Outdoor Sportsman's Expo this past spring. Just a super guy. And he just got back from Florida. Won't hold that against him, but fishing in I think there's a crappie tournament on Perry he's fishing today. Just cold turkey, no pre-fishing or anything. But he's kind of said the same thing everybody else does. There's some fish on the banks. There's some that have already spawned. There's some that are staged out a little bit further from the bank. You know, last weekend we were finding still, in most waters, Kansas and Missouri, upper 50-degree water. Well, now all of a sudden it's in the low 70s, 71, 72 degrees, and everything's happening real fast. But it's very good and catching a lot of fish. He's saying the same thing. The walleye are out on those flats, and again, some of the crappie are up shallow, and so it's worth poking around. But some of those bigger fish are out a little deeper, 5, 8, 12 foot deep. Heard the same thing on Lake of the Ozarks. Pretty much the same thing. Anybody that I've talked to that's been out is kind of telling me the same story. And there are a few people that are doing this right after dark, and Terry is one of those people. He's a big late afternoon, early evening, after dark kind of a deal. And especially, we had a good bright moon last night. Oh, mm-hmm. My gosh, that would have been.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Good time.
Yeah. This is the time of year you better have a live scope, hadn't you?
Well, it's yes and no. Yeah. You know, like Richard Bowling, he's one of the better. And Brian Andreka, the Kansas Angling Experience, he's the same way. He's strictly a live scope fisherman. And, you know, when the walleye get out there in deeper water, the hybrids, that live scope is money. And the crappie, that's what Richard's doing. He's going he's fishing the fish that have not spawned yet, or catching some of the ones that are heading back out to out of the coves and creeks, and he's live scoping. So he's live scoping these coves and these creeks out in the middle and finding these fish that are a little scattered but not pressured as much, and just tearing them up. But on the other hand, you don't need it. This is a time where if you want to bank fish or just pound the banks, you don't need the live scope to do that, and you're going to do good.
Sounds good to me. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know, what the hey. One other note, kind of upbeat note. Talk to John Devney, Senior Vice President of Delta Waterfowl. And I said, what's going on in Dakotas? This is the time of year I worry about habitat and nesting. He said, it's probably a 10.
No way.
They've had that 3 and 4 foot snow across Dakotas, and some of them potholes that hadn't been dry for years and years and years are back on the deal.
If they've got some water, that's good. That's good news.
Yeah, it ought to, boy, you know, for the guys that are into this, you know, this duck hunting like I am, this is really, really going to be a good year, the way it looks to me. Because I don't think the harvest was that strong. I mean, it doesn't make any difference anyway, but.
Yeah.
They've noted, but it's still, going to be a real good hatch. And
well,
a
so
lot
much
of good
depends
things.
On whether or not they've got water in those potholes
yeah.
up there.
Yes,
if they got exactly. that, that's yeah. really a good step.
And they're doing their predation problem
right.
to take care of up there down the waterfowl is. Hey, we are brought to you, before we get Dr. James Kroll on here, call your buddies, V Deer Hunter. You might want to listen to the show. We are brought to you by Reed Chevrolet. I got to spend a little time with Trevin last week. I got to hang out on the dealership yesterday. I had a nail in my tire, and they fixed it for me up there at Reed. And I went in the back end back there, and them are the nicest guys. I never talk about the back end, how dedicated they are. And they're good employees, and they care. And so I went back there, and they treated me like I was the king of Siam, which am I? Am I the king of Siam?
No.
I'm not?
No. I'm sorry to break the news to you, but
in my mind, maybe could I be the king?
Well, your mind does work in mysterious ways.
Huh. You know, if you jumped off the Eiffel Tower, would you hit one of the main spars going down, or would you jump out far enough to hit on the ground?
Never really given
that
much
thought. Yeah, I give that thought all the time. But anyway, I was talking to the guys there. They're getting some new 22 Silverados up at Reed. There's nobody like these people. And I was in that business with Nastrom Chevrolet many, many, many years ago. And I know what it's like to be treated fair, square, and upright. And this is the way you do it. The Reed family, once you buy a product from Reed, you don't become a customer, you become family. They're fantastic humans. I could go on and on and on, and I have at times, maybe too much, but I just think the world of them. I think the world of all their dealerships that they have, they've got them around Kansas City. You get treated the same, non-commissioned salespeople. There's nobody there like them. And when you're in there, you can tell the difference. People giggling while they're buying a car. You know, there's no stress factor involved. Yeah,
exactly.
And that's priceless to me in a deal. I don't know where the industry got off sideways, but they did.
Boy, they sure did.
Yeah. So anyway, if you're in the market, it's Frederick Boulevard. They named that after me. I didn't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I mean, you're famous.
I-29 Frederick Boulevard. St. Joseph, Missouri, 28-minute drive north of the airport if you drive like you have no common sense. The finest dealership in America is Reed Chevrolet. We come back. We're going to have Dr. James Kroll, Dr. Deer, ought to make a good radio cool. show. Put your feet up, grab you that second cup of coffee, and we'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm kind of amped up this morning because I have, as our guest scheduled and on the line with us, Dr. James Kroll. Dr. Deer, as we so passionately come to know him on the outdoor channels, and I enjoy watching him probably more than anybody on the outdoor channel, and I mean that from my heart. Doctor, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for the compliment. That means a lot.
Well, you're a good human. I know that. Hey, how's Susie doing?
She's doing great. Mrs. Deer is doing great. She, I wouldn't be able to do shows like this if it wasn't for her. She keeps
yeah.
me straight.
I'll bet you it's a challenge to be married to Dr. James Kroll, the deer hunter. Gone all the time?
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't. I don't envy her in that.
Hey, Dr. Kroll, you know, if you look at your biography, I mean, it is mind-numbing the things that you have accomplished. This is Mark, by the way.
Yeah.
The things that you have accomplished in your career. And, I mean, the different research that you've done, the teachings, the awards, the television shows, radio shows, all the things that you've done to help people, that help deer. And, I mean, you've taken this deer passion of yours on a level that nobody else in the world has. What happened to you as a young person?
What happened to you?
Where did this come from?
Well, first of all, I don't take the credit for it. I give it to God. But when I was 7 years old, they asked me what I wanted to be, and I said I want to be a wildlife biologist, and
wow.
that's all I've ever been. And really, I've never worked a day in my life. I've sweat a lot, but I've never worked a day in my life.
Well,
I love what I do, and I love those animals. And importantly, I'm a teacher, and I love love working with hunters and landowners, and, you know, whether it be television or my Facebook page or whatever, I like to give people useful information, and that's the way we've always done our research, is we studied and are studying things that are relevant to your audience.
Exactly. Well, we've got a deer hunting audience up here, and this is a 50,000-watt radio station that reaches an awful long ways, and I think it's the third largest radio station in the United States for coverage. And so we've got the deer hunters, and we're going to talk a little bit now. One of the subjects that I had a buddy of mine, I was talking to him about going to have you on this weekend, he said, ask the good doctor about CWD. Is it much to do about nothing?
Oh, I figured you'd probably ask me about that. Yeah, I'm kind of a curmudgeon or a voice in the wilderness sometimes on CWD, but CWD is, I never minimize the impact of any disease in deer, but CWD has been it's a problem as a political problem and not a biological problem. The most significant disease in white-tailed deer, the one that takes more lives annually, is EHD. And we call it EHD because we don't want to say epizootic hemorrhagic disease.
Yeah.
But it's a much more bigger impact. But it's a very complex issue. A lot of politics, a lot of money, a lot of misinformation. It's very frustrating to me. You know, when I was deer czar, as they called me in Wisconsin, we found out some interesting things about things that were employed that didn't work, and yet not a single agency has employed anything that actually works.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole problem with CWD, it's a prion, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a protein.
Uh-huh.
It's not a organism. It's an aberrant protein, a misshaped protein.
Mm-hmm.
And they exist in all of us, not the misshapen ones, but what we do know scientifically is they do serve a function in our nervous system, but when they get distorted and they have the ability to distort other right, correctly shaped prions, that they become a real problem.
Yeah, and there, I mean, I look at this and I've read a lot about this. Of course, I'm not at your level of reading on this thing or knowing about this, but this is just going to be something we're going to have to deal with all the way through, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We don't know how long deer have dealt with this, and they are dealing with it. I have profound faith in the white-tailed deer. And, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, I came out with a comment that I felt like that there are some genetic solutions to all this, and the white-tailed deer would work it out. And I was severely criticized by the establishment.
Mm-hmm.
And now the establishment is holding on to a new concept that, genetically, the deer may solve this problem.
Hmm. Interesting. Hmm. Just with time and purebred,
yeah.
What I call purebred deer, huh?
Nature finds a way.
Natural selection is the deer are unbelievable in responding to things. They have over eons, especially the last 200, 300 years, have managed to survive all sorts of things, and they're still with us, and they'll be with us when we're gone.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a lot of faith in deer.
Yeah. If you eat a deer that's got CWD, are you going to croak?
No.
Okay.
The thing that I've said so many times, and it's remained true, is CWD is a problem if you can say yes to two questions. Number one, will it decimate deer herds? Number two, can human beings catch it? The answer to both of those is no. Now, On the last one, can human beings catch it? No one's ever been able to show that human beings can, but and we talk about follow the science all the time, and most recently there was a study done up in Canada, and never was published. It was given as a PowerPoint talk, and the next thing you know, it's being picked up, in spite of the fact that it hasn't been published, that monkeys could come down with CWD after they perform some what we call Frankenstein experiments.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But no, the people are perfectly safe. We know that it's been around at least since the 60s, and how many million pounds of venison have been consumed by human beings, and no one has ever been demonstrated to have acquired CWD.
Now, have you ever heard of or know of Creutzfeldt-Jacobson disease from a deer hunter?
Oh yeah, deer hunters can. There have been deer hunters that have come down with it, but it's natural. Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease attacks 1 to two per million. That's a pretty low case.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because it, like other prion diseases, has three forms. One is spontaneous. Another one is familial or family, and the other one's infective. CWD is the same way. All prion diseases can happen sporadically.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that when they find one somewhere, there's a test that has been scientifically valid for, I don't know how long, 50 years. It's called the Western blot test. They could, when they find a deer out there test positive, they could test it with Western blot to see if it's a spontaneous case or if it's an infective case. They never do that.
Never do that, do they?
Nope.
Dr. Kroll, I've got a very dear friend of mine. He wanted me to make sure to tell you hello. Jeff Williams. He had a NutriDeer product that you tested, and it won your Dr. Deer seal of approval. And he's just a heck of a good guy. He had so many nice things to say about you and your wife, Susie, so I just have to pass that along. What was that study? Do you remember what that was?
We did a blind test to see if this product was really preferred by deer, and it was. And not only that, but the analysis of what was in the product was very beneficial to deer. And he's a very ethical guy. And I think in my entire career, I think I've endorsed maybe six or seven things. So
wow, that says a lot right there.
That says an awful lot.
I'm talking to him, and we were talking about food plots, and he wanted me to see if you would explain how to build a fence to keep deer out of your food plot. And I thought, what? Keep deer out of your food plot?
Yeah, that's another thing we were way ahead of our time on. In 1977, we worked with the Gallagher Company and also what was then the Soil Conservation Service to develop just a three-strand fence that would keep deer out of food plots. And people ask us then, why would you ever want to keep a deer out of a food plot? But now the people understand the usefulness of it. And we based it on deer vision. Deer have 20/150 vision. And pretty poor depth perception. As an aside, they cannot see HD camo, mm-hmm. but we still wear it, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because we look so good in it.
Yeah.
But the fence has got, it's all hot wires. It's one at 18 inches, the next one at 24 inches. Then we come out 36 inches and put a twisted tape. All of these are electrified with it. I like Gallagher. I don't work with them, but I've used them since the 70s. We run about 7,000 volts. It'll dry your socks out.
Mm-hmm.
a deer could easily jump that fence, but they come up to it, and the three-dimensionality of it is such that they investigate, and when they do, they get a negative reward.
Yeah.
And it works very well. You know, does it keep all deer out? No, not all of them. There's always a hard head.
Mm-hmm.
But it works very well, and so we started working with that. And we do things to this day, like rotation and grazing, and we let deer in and out. They learn those fences. They learn the gates.
Hmm.
It's very useful, especially for summer food plots, like using cowpeas or soybeans, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it works real well. But it's finally caught on. There's several companies now that are selling the equipment, which I'm glad that they're doing that.
Exactly.
They all think they invented it, but they... I'm just glad they're selling the kit.
Now, here's the question. I think that everybody's kind of waiting around. The deer-aholics that I hunt with, they want a big buck on their farm. Everybody does. They want a 150 and up, and, boy, you know. Here in the Midwest, Doc, we got alfalfa, we've got soybeans, we got corn, we got acorns, we got a little bit of everything as far as high protein. Mm-hmm. Is there any sense for a mineral lick at all?
Well, we made the first deer mineral, and the answer to that is no.
Okay.
I have never been able, as developer of deer mineral, I've never been able to show scientifically that it's done anything. Neither has any other scientist. We still put out granular mineral because I'm an old cowman, and I know it works even though I can't prove it works. But the correct answer is no.
Okay.
It's best to give deer minerals through their food, and you can do that through fertilization. You can do it through forage management. That's the best way for them to get it. You realize that the calcium and phosphorus, which are two of their most important elements, they come from their flat bones of their body. So it's actually a year delay in utilization of those minerals and making those antlers.
Hmm. I mean, what is the key then? Is just old age? A deer's got to be 3, 5 years, 7 years old or something like that? Is that base step A?
Yeah. You know, we've said for years there's three things that determine big antlers: age, nutrition, genetics. And of those three, we can do nothing about genetics. But age and nutrition are the number one and number two. But recently I've changed it to nutrition and then age. But age is definitely a factor in that. The trouble is that most hunters, they're not as bad as they were when I first started my career. You know, when I first started, the deer hunter saw a deer for 3 seconds, deer, buck, boom.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, hunters are a lot more picky about what they're killing. They realize that killing young bucks doesn't produce older bucks and higher scoring bucks. Back to that 150 class deer thing, we did a 17-year stay where we caught, oh, I don't know, something like 15,000 buck fawns and yearlings, tagged them and turned them back loose in the wild, and then captured them, or they were shot later. And this is here in Texas, which in an area where they really managed for trophy deer, and only 12 to 15% ever broke 150 in their life.
Wow.
Wow. That's amazing.
Is that genetics?
Yeah, that's the genetic part of it. Uh-huh. And less than 1% broke 160.
Wow.
Dang.
That is amazing. So when here in Kansas somebody killed a 202 here a while back, what was the girl that we had on, two-something? Was that a kind of a freak of nature, or what do you think about that?
Yeah, they antler score, I think everybody knows now about the bell-shaped curve.
Mm-hmm.
And that deer is way over there on the right-hand side of that curve. And one of the positive things we've learned from the deer breeding industry is just how special those deer are and what has to happen in order to produce a buck like that. You know, it is definitely a freak of nature.
Hmm. So if people have land and they want to modify it, to help try to produce bigger bucks, what's step A? What's the most important things? You said nutrition is definitely part of the equation, and that's something that we have control over. So where do you start if you have your land?
Well, you have to start with a plan. And you want to make what we call managing the deer landscape. And you want to landscape for whitetails. And, the basic management unit for whitetail deer is 80 acres. That's the minimum area that they need. And I know two things. I know everybody has at least 80 acres, and all land is square. But you need to lay out your land so that the deer want to be there. And probably one of in the Midwest, in your country, the most limiting factor is winter thermal cover.
Hmm.
That is without a doubt. I look at millions of acres of land every year, and winter thermal cover is so lacking in the Midwest, it's unbelievable.
It
now,
sure
what
is.
Makes winter thermal cover?
Yeah.
Conifers, dense stands of conifers.
Redwood.
Some areas, cedars, pines,
yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah. Okay. That makes good old common sense, though, doesn't it?
Yep.
That's about all it amounts to in a deal. I'm allowed one dumb question per interview, so I'm going to ask you a dumb question.
All right.
Where is the new world record coming from?
I'm asked that often. I still think Kansas has the opportunity to produce a new world record, but I think Indiana has real potential at it.
Hmm. Is it genetics? Is that the deal?
Yeah, I think so. Indiana has, especially the eastern part of the state, has some unique, has good soils, has good genetics. The only thing I think has kept Indiana from producing a lot more big bucks than they have, which has been some, is the way the agency manages their deer herd.
Mm-hmm. You mean they're hunting them during the rut? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Years ago, my colleague Marchington, he did a study on deer across North America and what was unique about places that produce large numbers of Boone and Crockett bucks. And basically, he said this, that it's areas where they have tremendous soils, a large amount of agriculture, and also they do not either do not have a rifle season or they don't have it during the rut.
I see.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
Good old common sense. And in Iowa, it produces so many, but it's shotgun and slugs, allegedly, you know, up there. So their limitation of 100 yards or less on a shotgun or slug on a deal. So they always consistently rank up there having some really, really good quality deer. Missouri is doing a study where they're putting transmitters on whitetail deer. And some of the stuff that I've read, I was pleasantly surprised or maybe even shocked. These deer sometimes take off and just go places. I mean, I think one deer has moved over 170 miles away from where it was caught. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh, yeah. I've spent 27 years of my life radio tracking deer.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And in the old days. Yeah, there are two kinds of bucks, dominant bucks. There are dominant residents and dominant floaters. And dominant residents are the ones that you see on your place every year, you know, till somebody shoots him.
Mm-hmm.
And they pretty well are the bull of the woods, literally, in that area. Then there's a personality trait, and it's genetic, that produces what we call floaters, or bucks that travel miles. And back in the 70s, we had several bucks that we'd find them in the same place every spring and summer. And then in fall, they would go tremendous distances, roam all over the landscape, and then by the next spring, they were back in the exact same place.
Wow.
Now, when you see, most of the time, you don't see a lot of fighting between bucks because they know each other. But the fights that you do see are when a floater arrives. He is one mean son of a gun, and he likes to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So he shows up, whips the local king, and breed some of the does and moves on. Now that's biologically important because they're responsible,
yes,
for keeping down inbreeding.
Yes, that's very, very important in a deal. You know, I talked to a lot of deer hunters, and I especially talked to people who killed a monster, you know. And I'll say to them, I say, were you watching this deer? Did you know anything about this deer? No, that's the first time I ever saw him. I had trail cams up, and all of a sudden there's this deer standing in front of me, and he's world class. Do you think it was just one of those floater deers that just went from county to county?
Yes, I would definitely think so.
Huh.
You know, when they kill a really big one in Wisconsin, for example, over there in that Buffalo River, they've got guys all over the country that got trail cam pictures of that deer.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, no kidding.
That is, what's the factor? I mean, is there roaming dogs that are get on them and chase them? Is it just a genetic thing? I mean, what's driving these deer to move so far away?
It's genetic.
Genetics?
Yeah, it's just genetic. They got wanderlust. It's just like people. Mm-hmm. You know, why did people go out and become mountain men? You know?
Sure.
So.
Yeah. Well, what's the future of the deer? What I mean, I have so many friends who are scared to death of CWD and all the diseases that the deers get, spongiform encephalitis or whatever they want to talk about. But what is the future? It's pretty bright, isn't it?
Oh, the future for the deer is really bright. The future for deer hunting, I'm kind of concerned about because hunters are declining for lots of reasons, most of which is changing lifestyle and traditions. These are really the good old days for deer hunting. We've killed more big bucks in the last 10 years than they have, you know, for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's the problems are going to be more land use relationships. Like one of the things that really worries me is fragmentation.
Yes.
Is when I started my work here in East Texas, the average parcel size was a little over 400 acres. Now it's less than 40 acres.
Wow.
And that produces a landscape that's not manageable. And then also, I do see some issues. You know, populations of deer have gone down about 18-19% since 2000, but it's not from CWD. It's we allowed them to be overpopulated too long. You know, you were talking about, like, Iowa a moment ago. Those are great states to kill great deer, but evidence is showing that those herds are also somewhat declining because if you you know, I hear this a lot, that well, we don't need to plant food plots, we don't need to do this, we got all this agriculture. Oh, really? Do you have that agriculture in October?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's bare ground in October. And what I'm seeing is the deer, quite frankly, the deer, some of the easiest deer I've ever hunted have been in the Midwest, where you've got those woodlots and you got stringers that the deer expand and contract from.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you walk around there and look at the deer foods, and they are disappearing. I was in a place not too long ago in Illinois, and there was nothing to eat in that forest.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned about that. But, you know, the way deer have been managed in the past is, you know, we've lived, I always say, we've lived life like the wino who drinks his bottle with a sack around it so he can't see the end coming. And, you know, the worst thing that ever happened was when state agencies started publishing record harvest.
Yeah.
You know, record harvest, record harvest. And when you do that, well, you create an expectation of a straight line, and it's not. It's going to have to level off. But with fewer hunters, hey, you got a great world out there if you can get landowners to let you on their property.
Dr. Crawl, I've been on the radio for 37 years. You've made my whole recording career, and I mean that from my heart. You're a wonderful human. I hear nothing but good things. I got friends that know you. You're the last of the straight shooters. I really appreciate you more than you ever do, but we're out of time.
Well, I appreciate you guys. You guys are the most important thing.
Hey, just real quick before we get off the air, I know you were one of the first people to ever do food plot research, and I know there's different foods that you recommend and fruit trees and whatnot. Is there some place that people can go to get information from you and recommendations?
Yeah, they can go to my Facebook page. I give a lot of information out there. They can go to wildtree.co, not .com, but .co. That's a good one to go to as well.
Well, Doc, thank you. We're out of radio time. This thing went by so fast.
Yeah.
Could there someday we could get you back on the air?
Yeah.
Anytime, man.
All right, buddy. I'm going to give you a call. Tell Susie I said hello, and thanks for her conversation I had with her.
You're more than welcome.
All right,
thank you, sir. What an honor.
What an honor, Dr. Yep. James Crawl.
Yeah.
An honor. Yep. Sure Ag Company. I didn't forget them. It's just that I got so enthused with this interview. Sure Ag is a spinoff of Sure Grow. They're located in, if you're farmers out here, we have a lot of farmers, Osborne, Missouri, Savannah, Missouri, Four City, Missouri, the Bobcats, and Rich Mendenhall runs the whole shooting match. And those guys are so professional at spraying, fertilizing, you know, and this cost of input of farm ag is so exorbitant. It's crazy times. You got to make it work, and you got to get every foot of your farm to produce. They're professionals, got over 135 years of experience. I've been using them for 15 years. There's nobody finer. Sure Ag up in Four City, Savannah, Osborne. Wraps it up.
That's too quick.
We need a great guest.
We needed 2 hours.
Yeah, I need 2 hours.
With him.
Yeah. Or a week.
Yeah, right.
Really. Hey, what, that wraps it up for this edition of the Midwest Outdoors. We got to go for this week. The next time we see you, I hope we see you in the great outdoors.
Have a great week. So long, everybody.